Yep, where, when, and how? That's the question I ask myself. I ask the Father whenever I get up in the morning, I'm ready to get on my day. I say, all right, Father, where, when, and how? Because how many know you can plan, you can make plans, you think your days and ways are going to go certain ways and however it's going to be, but it might not always turn out that way. So He knows what's along the path ahead. You don't, I don't, at best, but where, when, and how. Things don't always go the way you expect them to go. But if you're following Him and listening to His voice in the wilderness, it's going to have a good outcome. And I got a little testimony to kind of deal with where, when, and how. You know, as you go along. In one of the Torah portions, there was a slide, and I know everybody remembers it. Every choice affects a future for blessing or curses, life or death. So it's very important, every choice that we make. You know, it's so important to be here, to be not only gaining the knowledge and the wisdom, but the Torah is our instructions for life. And if we're getting instructions for life and we live in it, we're inevitably going to come across somebody's path that's going to need what we have. And the other morning, I didn't expect it to happen, but there's a customer I've been fishing the last couple of years. They come once a year at this time. And we got on the boat right before daylight, and I'm fixing to launch the boat. And the question popped up. I said, hey, I noticed on Facebook you have the Torah and something else. You have Torah and Shabbat. What is that? So I had to explain to him what that is. And so how awkward that would be if you're putting something on Facebook like that and then you can't even explain what it is, right? So it's exciting to be able to share that if you know that. And so I did. I explained to him what Torah meant. And, you know, I gave him some great detail in it. And then he's like, well, I know that, but how does it stem or to deal with the Old Testament? So it's your first five books of your Bible. It's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Devarim, Deuteronomy. We're in that one right now. And so we was able to talk and share for a good little while. And so one of his children was there. I mean, children, but they're in their 20s. And they said, well, isn't that for the Jews? And you know that's always going to pop up. And so it was easy to talk about that, because it's not just about the Jews, we know that. But I explained to them, I said, you know, most Christians automatically assume Jews, because that may be all they know, because they don't know. A lot of it deals with because nobody knows. They don't go back and read and find out, what is an Israelite? What is these Hebrew words? Where did it come from? How did it get there? Rather than just looking at an English translation. So I proceeded to explain to them, just like Jesus, Yeshua, He's a Jew. But He's one part of one of the tribes of Israel, Judah. And then you have the rest of the tribes of Israel. And so I explained to him in great detail everything I knew, and it made a lot of sense to him. Like, oh, Hebrew, Israelites. Yeah. I said, so when you go read your Bible, you don't read in there, these are for the Jews, that is for the Jews, and all this is the Jews, Jews, Jews. You read about Yisrael. And your English is with an I, but in Hebrew, it's with a Y. Yisrael. Most all your Hebrew letters is with a Y. And so I was able to explain that to them, and they're like, wow, that's pretty neat. I never looked at it that way. And I said, it's sad, you know, a lot of Christianity just keep assuming that, but just go back. Go back and study it and read it for yourself, and you're going to find out some things that you never knew. So assumptions and making up things is what's gotten us to where we are today, of people saying certain things when they really don't know. And they don't know. We didn't know. You know, you can't fault find or point your finger at somebody because they don't know. We'll find out. We'll pray and ask and seek and find. So that was just one little piece of the puzzle. And then a couple of days before that, we took a big group fishing, me and Brother Preston. And so we've learned what zitzits are, represent the Torah, and we wear them for our own selves to remind us of the commandments. And so we was on the boat fishing the other day, and there was two guys that kind of looked out of the ordinary. They had these long beards out of the group, out of eight. And so I was talking about their beard, and I was like, man, y'all got some long, pretty beards. I said, I try to grow mine a little long, but it's so puffy. I just kind of keep it about like this, you know, but I like that, you know. But I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was. And so when we got back to the dock from fishing, Brother Preston comes grabbing me by my shirt, and he says, hey, brother, he's an Israelite. I said, really? He goes, yeah, he asked me about my zizis. He said, hey, are you a part of the blood of Israel? And he's like, no, I may or may not be, Brother Preston said, but I know this much. I'm grafted in through the Messiah, so I'm part of it now. I'm part of the Messiah because I'm grafted in. He's like, amen, brother. And so he says, you got to come talk to Brother Chad. So he brings him over to me because he only can go so far, you know, what he knows and what he can say. And so I proceeded with the rest and explained to him what we're doing, where we are in the Torah portions for the past 7 years. And he's like, well, I've been in it for two years. And we're from the bottom of Missouri, the upper part of Arkansas. And he says, we're not part of a big congregation, but we've been kind of filling in with some others. And we have already gotten affiliated with the bottom of Missouri to the top of Arkansas, over 5,000 Israelites or grafted in coming from non-denomination. And I was like, 5,000? I was like, man, that's a lot. And so we was all excited, and we talked for the longest about everything. And he's like, man, this is so simple. I said, yeah, it's simple. It's not that hard at all. And then we departed, and when I was on my way home, I'm like, man, I didn't get his name. I didn't get his number. And so I text the owner of the company yesterday, and so he group messages, Chad, meet so-and-so. So-and-so, meet Chad, and gave us each our numbers. And so we was able to talk to each other. And it's pretty neat meeting people like that. You get excited because you can relate to one another. And so I passed him on some of Faith Temple Ministries stuff. I said, you could look at this. Do you have something that you could share with me? He says, we're loners. We're loners. I'm like, wow. So they got people out there that are loners. They're not part of a big congregation. But they're finding out the truth. And they're tapping into it. And they're doing their homework. So you never know what you're going to run into. So I wake up in the morning and say, Father, I don't know where, when, or how, in my fishing trip and going to town, or what we're going to talk about or who we're going to meet. I have no idea, but I just thank you for leading me in that direction. And so he's faithful to do that. So every choice affects a future for blessing or cursing, life or death, or even meeting people. I mean, look. We have AJ and Maynard and their families here today. Just think, if we weren't on the right road, the right path, at the right time, this wouldn't be today. I tell a lot of people whenever they talk about Hurricane Katrina, they're like, oh man, that must have been terrible. I said, you know, it was bittersweet. I said, if I had it happen again, I'd be excited because of the people I got to meet. I wouldn't have got to meet all the people I met if it wasn't for a hurricane. So people still moping years later about their laundry or something that's in the yard that got destroyed or a picture of this or that, and never ever get to look at the real thing. That the Father's allowed us to go through that for a reason. And that's what these Torah portions are about. You'll be able to hear his voice in the wilderness. You have to be in the wilderness to hear his voice. So we have Devarim, and we went through all the Hebrew letters and their pictograph meanings. We don't have to go over them again tonight. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to slide 26. And Devarim, Deuteronomy, is the most quoted book. Hold on a second. There it is right there. The whole pictograph letters of Devarim is what said this. It says, as we come to the door of Messiah and guard his appointed times, his feasts, that are commanded for the house dwelling place of Elohim, we submit under the head of the house, the body, for it is by his outstretched arm and hand that we are delivered out of the nations and cleansed to be a set apart bride that submits to the complete authority of the words of our master and king. And that's what you get out of the pictograph meanings of each letter of Devarim. And we talked about the B, when it's underlined, it's pronounced as a V. And when you look at the letter with the dot in the middle or the dot underneath, it could be a B or it could be a V. So Devarim, Deuteronomy, is the most quoted book in the Renewed Writings, the New Testament. And it is in this book that Moshe reflects on the Israelites' 40-year wilderness journey in relation to Yehovah's clear instructions and teaching for them. This book is often referred to as the Mishnah, or the Haturah, which means second reading or copy of the Torah, which comes from the phrase Mishnah HaTorah Hazath Al-Sefer, Sefer. This phrase we see being used in Devarim 17:8, and it shall be, when he sits on the throne of his reign, that he shall write for himself a copy of this Torah in the book from the one before the priests and the Levites. Breaking down this phrase, we can see the root of each word as follows. And we went through all these. I'm not going to go through these tonight. I just wanted to relate mostly on the pictograph meanings of the word Devarim. There's a certain slide on here, I can't remember what number it was, but it says, we can learn a great deal from this, and that is simply this: if you rebel and remain stiff-necked in refusing to heed the words of the Torah, then the wilderness journey of learning will take longer than necessary, and there may even be the risk of dying in the process. And so we're going to learn that. It's further down in the slides, but that right there stuck out to me the most. The longer it takes for us to fix our behavior, the longer it's going to take for us to get there, and we may die in the process. So what I mean by that is, whenever he says something is commandment, and we keep disregarding it, it's his love towards us. And if we don't heed to it, it can get us in a lot of trouble, even kill us in the process. And we talked about what sin is. Sin is missing the mark. We talked about missing the mark. And so Yeshua was a living Torah, and he obeyed everything the Father told him to do, and therefore he hit the mark head on. He didn't miss the mark at all. And so he says in John 14:15, if you love me, you guard my command, my words, my instructions, and my Torah. So we'll start right here. Deuteronomy, Devarim, summarizes the wilderness journey and closes the life of Moshe, and is a great picture for us of how it is the Torah, as pictured through the leading of Moshe, that leads and prepares the bride of Messiah, those who guard and walk in the set-apart ways of Messiah, to her wedding. Once the bride understands and fully walks in the Torah, her wilderness days will be over, and she'll be able to proceed to her wedding. You know, when I was reading this, I was thinking about Esther. You know, Queen Vashti with King Ahasuerus, I think that's how you say his name. He was angry with the queen because he had some commandments that he commanded and she didn't listen. She didn't do what he said. And so when Esther came about, it's kind of like getting the bride prepared, getting us prepared. His likes and his dislikes. And it's the same way with this. He's preparing the bride for Yehovah, his likes and his dislikes. It is the teachings of Moshe, the Torah, that leads the bride to her betrothal, and it will be the spirit of Eliyahu that will take the bride to her wedding. The Torah with the spirit has the transforming power necessary for our lives to be a ready and prepared bride. So when we also understand the necessity of these words, Devarim, we must also recognize that Yeshua is the Word made flesh, and He, our teacher of righteousness, is the purpose and goal of the Word. Those who will listen and take these words to heart will be carried into victory. And this is the command to leave Horeb. And Pastor on the first night asked, does anybody know what Horeb is? Or what the mountain's name was? And so that would be Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai. Horeb is Mount Sinai. Deuteronomy 1:1. These are the words which Moshe spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness, in the desert plain opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Hazeroth and Di-Zahab. And all these names mean something. You know, we get in there and we just start reading through all this and say, oh, this is just a name, this is a name. In Hebrew, it means something. And at that time, it meant something. And it's going to break it down for us in the Torah portion as we go along. In verse 1, in the first verse, we can glean some very important lessons in our need to assess our lives on a daily basis through the mirror of His Word. Remember, the Torah is looking at the reflection of what we need to fix, what we need to change, our behaviors, and how we're acting. And I need to assess our lives on a daily basis through the mirror of His Word and correctly choose the path. And, you know, Pastor talked about it, you know, when the priests would come down and they would come to the laver, when they look into it, they would see a reflection of their face. And that's what it does. It shows a reflection of making sure that you're right before you go in. We've got to make sure that we're clean. And that's why whenever we make mistakes, we got a teshuva. We got to make ourselves correct before Yehovah, before we can just go in any kind of way. Let us look at some. It says, the mirror of His Word, and correctly choose the path that leads to life and not that which leads to death. Let us look at some very important key words that are contained in this first verse, which straight up cause us to choose to hear and obey and enter in, or ignore, rebel, and be locked out. These words were spoken in the wilderness in the desert plain opposite of Suf. The Hebrew word for in the wilderness is Bamidbar. We just left that book. Everybody remember Bamidbar? Numbers. Which comes from the root word Midbar, Strong's H4057, which means wilderness, desert. So you see all these names, if you just look at it in English, you really don't know what the details of it is. But when you look at it in the Hebrew, it means something. And it was the journey. And it was in the wilderness. And it reflects us today. We're in the wilderness. We were lost. We were blind. We were bound to sin. We didn't know what we was doing. We were just doing what everybody else does. And so then all of a sudden, we get called. The mantle gets tossed to us through Yeshua by Yehovah. He calls us. And our eyes are open. We get born again. And we can see clearly that we were going in error. And so we start making those corrections. And so when we go out in the world, we're supposed to be light to those who are blind because they can't see and they don't know. And so in our wilderness journey, not only we're coming out and reflecting the heavenlies, we're also helping others come out. Strong's H4057, which means wilderness, desert, and can also mean mouth. This word comes from the primitive root verb, devar. See the B right there, how it's underlined? You pronounce it devar. Strong's H1696, which means to speak, command, counsel, declare, proclaim, converse, warn, threaten, promise. And the derivative of this word is also translated as speech, word, commandments, and message. So you see how all this is tying in? How all this is going together? The meaning of Bamidbar, as mentioned, means in the wilderness. And the literal meaning of this actually carries the concept of the place of words or the place of speaking. What we are able to learn straight away from the setting of this book is simply this. It's time to listen. And remember the stories Pastor was talking about a while back? He says he told the story about the guy that was on a plane and the pilot passed out, whatever happened to him, and now he don't know how to fly a plane and he's relating to somebody else somewhere else and he had to listen to the voice to land the plane. And so here we are in the wilderness. It is dark. We was on our own at one time, at best guessing at everything, headed for death, wide open, and all of a sudden we got his voice. But the only way you could hear his voice is to know his instructions of what he's saying and what he sounds like, who he is, and what he's all about. And so we go to the Torah to find out his likes, his dislikes, what he's like, what his character is like. And we got a great example to follow is Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus. He's the living Torah, and he shows us how to do it. It's time to listen. It is here in the wilderness where Yisrael learned to hear the voice of Yehovah and be in the necessary place to listen to what was spoken through Moshe. The Hebrew word that is translated as in the desert plain is barava, which comes from the word arava, Strong's H6160, which means desert, desert plain, wilderness. And this comes from the root word arav, Strong's H6150, which means to become evening or grow dark. So keep that in mind. Desert, desert plain, wilderness, and grow dark. I'll say it again. A desert place, a desert plain, wilderness, to become evening or grow dark. Grow dark. As the days get darker, so to speak, Yehovah sets and places us in the wilderness, the place of hearing, for it is a time to listen. He who has an ear to hear what the Spirit says by listening attentively to the clear and perfect Torah of Elohim. So you'll be able to relate to the Ruach HaKodesh, to the Spirit of Yehovah when he speaks, if you know what the Torah is. If you have a Bible and you know Matthew to the end, but you don't know nothing in Torah, how are you going to be able to discern the spiritual voices? Which one's which? Who's saying what? Or if it's not even real, it might be a lookalike, a fake leading you the wrong way. It could be one of those snakes like Pastor talked about that you could be right in his grips and not even know it. And he's just steady squeezing you and squeezing you and squeezing you to your death and you don't even know it. He who has ear to hear what the Spirit says by listening attentively to the clear and perfect Torah of Elohim. The Hebrew word for suf, Strong's H5489, means reed, seaweed, and in its primitive root form, it means to come to an end or cease. What we can figuratively learn from this is that as the days are getting darker and we're coming to the end times, we have to make a very clear choice of whether we want to enter in the promised land or not, and whether we'll be obedient to guard his commands and shine the light of his truth in the dark place we're sojourning in or not. And we've talked about that over and over. There is no in between. It's blessings, curses, life or death, light or darkness. There's no in between. There's no, I'm born again, I'm saved, and I can make it. No, you got to do something. We got to be obedient. He says, if you love me, you obey what I say. That's how you're going to make it out of the wilderness. You got to do what I say to make it out. Because at best, on our own, we had no leader, no way, no instructions, and we couldn't make it out, and we're all tainted with sin. But Yeshua comes, and he gives us the new life through the Torah. And it says, 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 19. I want to go into that whole book there, 2 Peter. Second Peter, starting with chapter 1. Shimon Kepha, a servant and emissary of Yeshua Messiah, to those who have obtained a belief as precious as ours by the righteousness of our Elohim and our Savior, Yeshua Messiah, favor and peace be increased to you in the knowledge of Elohim. In the knowledge of Elohim and Yeshua our Master, as his mighty like power has given to us all we need for life and reverence, through the knowledge of him who called us to esteem and uprightness. Through these there have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, so that through these you might be partakers of the mighty like nature, having escaped from the corruption in the world caused by lust. And for this reason, do your utmost to add to your belief uprightness, to uprightness, knowledge, to knowledge, self-control, to self-control, endurance, to endurance, reverence, to reverence, brotherly affection, and to brotherly affection, love. For if these are in you and increase, they cause you to be neither inactive nor without fruit in the knowledge of our Master Yeshua Messiah. For he in whom these are not present is blind. See, if we don't have these, we're blind, being short-sighted, and has forgotten that he has been cleansed from his old sins. For this reason, brothers, all the more, do your utmost to make firm your calling and choosing. Remember we talked about making a choice? For if you are doing these matters, you shall never stumble at all. For in this way, an entrance into the everlasting reign of our Master and Savior, Yeshua Messiah, shall be richly supplied to you. And so I intend to remind you of these matters again and again, though you know them and have been established in the present truth. But I think it is right, as long as I'm in this tent, to stir you up by a reminder, knowing that the putting off of my tent is soon, even as our Master Yeshua Messiah made clear to me. And I shall do my utmost also to see to it that you always have a reminder of these matters after my departure. For we did not follow cleverly devised stories when we made known to you the power and coming of our Master Yeshua Messiah, but were eyewitnesses of his superness. For when he received respect and esteem from Elohim the Father, such a voice came to him from the excellent esteem. This is my Son, the Beloved, in whom I did delight. And we heard this voice which came from heaven. They did. We heard this voice which came from heaven when we were with him on the set-apart mountain. And we have the prophetic word made more certain, which you do well to heed, as a light that shines in a dark place, until the day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts, knowing this first, that no prophecy of Scripture came to be of one's own interpretation. For prophecy never came by the desire of a man, but men of Elohim spoke, being moved by the set-apart Spirit. It came by His Spirit. And so, let us look at the choices we are to make, so to speak, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Ashtaroth and Dizahab. To begin with, we look at the first three mentioned here. Paran, Strong's 86290. This word means a place of caverns. And it comes from the primitive root verb, par, Strong's 86286, which has the meaning to beautify, adorn, or become boastful. So pay attention to these words, they're important. Tophel, Strong's H8603. This word means white, which comes from the same root as tophel, Strong's H602, which means whitewashed, tasteless, unseasoned, and foolish. Lavan, Strong's H3837. This word means white and comes from the root word laven, Strong's H3835, which means to be white, become white, purify, and this word as a verb is written as laven, which carries the meaning to make bricks. When we look at these three places and understand that we are called to be a bride that has made herself ready and adorned with the truth, we must choose to hear these words of the Torah and follow them and be adorned in the righteousness of Messiah as we diligently guard to do all that is commanded. For those who disregard these very clear words of Moshe may be found to simply be whitewashed. Remember when Yeshua talked about that with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and called some of them whitewashed tombs? Be whitewashed fools who try to claim the appearance of righteousness yet disregard the Torah and walk in lawlessness. As they refuse to submit under the guidance of the light yoke of the Torah of Messiah, while they hold fast to the heavy plaster yoke of man's traditions and dogmas. We see this word tophel, Strong's 8602, being used to describe folly. You see that a lot in Proverbs and different scriptures in the Bible, as seen in Lamentations 2:14. Your prophets have seen falsehood and folly for you, and have not shown you your crookedness to turn back your captivity. But your visions for you are false and misleading messages. As the days are getting darker, many will sadly listen to the folly of false prophets and fake deceptive teachers who only tickle the ears of their hearers and whitewash them with a twisted lie that gives them a sense of being clothed in righteousness while there is no Torah upon their hearts, showing that they are fools that are dead inside. Remember, you are whitewashed tombs on the outside, but on the inside, you are as dead men's bones. Look at the warning of Yeshua in Matthew 23:27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, because you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly indeed look well, but inside, are filled with dead men's bones and all uncleanness. We have a choice to be adorned as a beautiful bride or be whitewashed. We who are adorned with the clear instructions of righteousness through the Torah and overcome are the true living stones that are being built up, whereas the whitewashed walls will be broken down. Revelations 2:17 says, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the assemblies. To him who overcomes, I shall give him some of the hidden manna to eat, and I shall give him a white stone, and on the stone a renewed name written which no one knows except him who receives it." Now let us look at the difference between Hatzeroth and Dizahab. Hatzeroth, Strong's H2698, means a settlement or an enclosure, and can also picture for us in Hebrew a trumpet-shaped enclosure for sheep. Dizahab, Strong's H1774, this word means enough gold, as it comes from the two words, settlement enclosure and enough gold. And as you're going through these Torah portions, and it's new to you, these words, I didn't recognize these last year. Now this year, I'm looking at them, and I'm studying them. Things from last year, I remember this year, and it starts clicking, it starts sticking, and you start remembering it. These, I might not remember them, but next year, I'll remember them, and it's going to connect to something else, and it's all going to connect the puzzle pieces together, and it's pretty incredible when you see it. Dehi, H1767, which means sufficiency enough, and Zahab, Strong's H2091, which means gold. Once again, as we approach the darker end times, we must ask ourselves, are we gathering sheep, or are we simply amassing wealth for ourselves? But what I mean, are we interested in making disciples as our master commanded, or are we more interested in chasing wealth and success for ourselves? Remember what he said, the world is passing away and everything in it is temporary. We're not of this world, right? We're not supposed to be. So if we stay in the world and keep doing the things that's in the world and not looking forward to the kingdom that's coming, we're going to die in the world. So he's trying to pull us out of there. Once he pulled us out of there, we'll be pulling others out with us. Once again, as we approach the darker end times, we must ask ourselves, are we gathering sheep or are we simply amassing wealth for ourselves? By that I mean, are we interested in making disciples as our master commanded, or are we more interested in chasing wealth and success for ourselves? Are you storing up treasures in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy, or are you chasing riches here on earth, riches and possessions and wealth that will be destroyed by moth and rust? Matthew 6:19-20. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Deuteronomy 1:2. 11 days journey from Hor of Mount Sinai by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. Deuteronomy 1:3. And it came to be in the 40th year in the 11th new moon. Remember we talked about moons? 11th new moon. It's the 11th month, right? 11th new moon. On the first day of the new moon, that Moshe spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Yehovah had commanded him concerning them. Verses 2 through 3. 11 days journey from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea. 40 years later. After coming out of Mishraim, or Egypt, and coming to Horeb, which is Mount Sinai, Israel spent a year hearing and learning all the instructions of Yehovah, delivered to them by the mouth of Moshe, which he wrote down. It then took a period of over 38 years to come to the place of the second hearing of the Torah. It was a result of rebellion, stubbornness, and pride that Yeshua had to sojourn this long, which was long enough for the rebellious generation to die out. And here we see that after 40 years, Moshe speaks to this new generation the very same words that were given at Mount Sinai, as well as a historical overview of the pitfalls that they have encountered as a result of their rebellion. We can learn a great deal from this, and that is simply this. If you rebel and remain stiff-necked in refusing to heed the words of the Torah, then the wilderness journey of learning will take longer than necessary, and there may even be the risk of dying in the process. The route from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea is an 11-day journey. Think about that. It's an 11-day journey. And yet we see it was now 40 years later where they are at the brink of entering into the Promised Land. He's trying to get our attention. We got to get this Torah right, and we got to be obedient to it. We got to Shema, we got to hear, and we got to Shemar, we got to guard and do. And every time we keep slipping up, and I make the mistakes myself, I don't know about you, but my limbs are hanging down like Pastor said. I'm like this, I'm saddened, I have my weeping times, I get frustrated with myself, I'm like, a thousand times, what is it going to take? You can't take it there. In the millennial, you can't take it there. It's just like Aharon's sons, when they took it in there, it burned them up. You can't take it with you there. He's trying to get us to learn the right behavior and be as he is. What he is of his Torah, eternal. There is no death there. There is no sin there. It's perfect and it's pure. It's not tainted at all. And that's why we're going to have to go through the Torah for 1,000 years with the Torah teacher himself, Yeshua, to get us to Yehovah in the 8th year, the 8,000th year. If we're still not ready then we still might not make it. We're going to have to be prepared and ready, a clean, pure bride. Forty years later, they were at the brink of entering into the Promised Land. They were now in the 40th year. However, if you calculate 40 years based on a 360-day per year calendar, which is most likely the case. Now, look, I'm going to read this to you. I need somebody like Sister Marlene or somebody to help me with these calculations because I didn't sit down and do this. I skipped over it a little bit because I had a lot more to look at and study. Because he even says in the commentary that he says, this may or may not be correct, but maybe you can go look at it. And that's what Yehovah wants us to do. He wants us to go and look at it and study it. He doesn't want us to just believe what Pastor Jesse is saying, and that's what it is. He says, don't take my word for it. You take this home and you do your research and you see what you come up with. It says, which is most likely the case, with each month being 30 days before the sundial of Ahaz was turned backwards 10 degrees. In the days when Hezekiah the king was sick and was given this sign in the cycles of the sun and the moon, as a sign that he would live still another 15 years, which impacted the cycle of the moon following the sun and its losing 10 days a year and resulting in the need to have a 13th month every 3 years, they would have been in the wilderness for 14 1,400 days? Is that what it says? 14,400 days? If we assume 40 years being approximately 14,400 days, then we can say that this journey took over 1,300 times longer than it could have taken, and in fact, they could have traveled back and forth 650 times. Now, I know these are only some simple calculations that one may argue over, as over 2 million people would take longer to move with all their baggage, tents, and livestock. Yet, the point of the matter is that in the second year, they had the opportunity to go in and possess the land. Yet, due to fear of the giants, the 10 spies influenced the entire nation into rebelling, which cost them another 38 years of traveling in the wilderness, being taken out because of their unbelief. The longer it takes us to get it, you see what I'm saying? What we must realize is this: we need the wilderness. We need the wilderness as we need to learn to hear the voice of Yehovah. For without the wilderness, there can be no instructions on how to become the adorned and ready bride we are meant to become. Yet what we must also realize is that we are not to grumble in the wilderness, for any grumbling could endanger our access to His promises. How many times the Father tells us over and over, give thanks in all things, give thanks in all things, give thanks in all things. Why? Because it's for our own good. It's for you. It's for our own good. And Pastor even said that this past Shabbat. He said when he first started his being a pastor, it was, I forget exactly the details of it, but he had a flat tire. Remember that? He talked about the flat tire. So you have things happen. And you're going to have things happen. For without the wilderness, there could be no instruction on how to become the adorned, ready bride we are meant to become. Yet, what we must also realize is that we are not to grumble in the wilderness, for any grumbling could endanger our access to His promises. Kadesh Barnea, Strong's 86947, means set apart, which comes from the words Kadesh. And so when we talk about the word in English in the Bible and it says holy, every time you see holy, the Hebrew word for holy is Kadosh, Kadesh. Kadesh means to be set apart. So that's why He told them all throughout their journey, be set apart, Kadesh, which means set apart in an unused word. Barnea, which is thought to be a compound of that which corresponds to bar, Strong's H1251, which is of Aramaic origin and means a field or open field, and a derivative of Nua, Strong's H5128, which means to wander, quiver, shale, tremble, shake, and gives reference to the meaning of a desert, of a fugitive. Deuteronomy 1:4, after he had stricken Sihon, sovereign of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, sovereign of Bashan, who dwelt at Asheroth in Edrei, beyond the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moshe undertook to declare this Torah, saying, now in the 11th new moon of the 40th year, Moshe spoke to all the children of Israel, after they had stricken Sihon, the sovereign of the Amorites, and Og, and Bashan. Here in verse 5, we are told that Moshe undertook to declare this Torah, and the Hebrew word that is translated here as declare comes from the primitive root verb ba'ar, Strong's H874, which means to make distinction, to make plain, expound on, inscribe, and by analogy, it means to engrave. And figuratively, it carries the understanding to explain, make clear, and declare. Moshe undertook to declare this Torah. See that? To explain, make clear, and declare. So the Hebrew root word that is translated as undertook is Ya'al, Strong's H2974, which means to show willingness, be pleased, determine, and undertake, to do something. Moshe's willingness to explain and make plain The Torah was done in a determined manner that pleased him. And so too do we need to recognize our need to be determined to listen to the word of Elohim and undertake to guard to do all we hear in a pleasing manner. And so Deuteronomy 1:6, Yehovah Elohim spoke to us in Horeb, saying, "You have dwelt long enough at this mountain." In verse 6, too long at this mountain. Too long at this mountain. In Horeb, Strong's H2722 means a desert and a waste. So think about Mount Sinai, Horeb. It means a desert waste. Horeb. It means a desert waste, which was a mountain in Sinai, and it comes from the word Kharab. Kharab. Strong's H2717, which means to be waste, desolate, to be dry or dried up, becomes parched and devastated. Now, while this mountain certainly has a lot of history, reminds us of the awesome events that took place here, when Israel heard the voice of Yehovah for the first time, we also understand that they could not stay here. Remember, if we rewind a little bit, every time they went from one place to the other, they learned some things there for that year or that time that they was there. They would pick up the stakes and say, "Come on, leave all those bad behaviors, whatever it is you had to learn out of there, you leave it behind and we're moving to the next place." And that's what we're doing in our journey. We're learning to knock away all those behaviors that are no good. We're learning to get rid of paganism, the things that he dislikes. And we're learning to grab a hold of the things that he likes and he loves and carry them with us. And put down your stakes. It was supposed to be. And there were many of them in the journey that rebelled and didn't do what he said. And they died along the way. And many of them started dying along the way. And when we get all the way there, the whole generation died except two, Joshua and Caleb. So that kind of gives you an idea of how tough it can be for us if we don't listen. We've got to really pay attention and listen. They spent a year here in order to hear and learn the Torah. They spent a year here in order to hear and to learn the Torah. The Torah was important. The Torah was very important. Remember, Pastor said it's going to take up all your time. It's going to be things that you like. And I tell you, my life, it keeps squeezing and squeezing and squeezing. And things that I like, it disappears. And this that I like, it disappears. And it just keeps taking up your time. But it has a great reward with it because it brings you closer and closer to the Father. It gets you closer and closer to seeing what He looks like and how awesome and incredible He is. And whenever you're on point and you're with Him, when you go out, you won't fear when you don't know how, when, or where. And when you get on that journey, it's like, wow, I could have never done that. I could have never ran into those people. I could have never figured it out that way. I could have never had just such an awesome time as I had that day. And oh, I couldn't have made it through that tough time this day, this week, this month, or this year of this tragedy that happened in my life. But I'm going to make it with Him. I'm going to make it. They spent a year in order to hear and learn the Torah. And I can certainly understand why we also go through the Torah cycle yearly. Yet, what we also learn is that we cannot get stuck at this place. We've got to move. We can't stay here. The ones who lollygagged around and were left in the background, they got taken out by Amalek. Remember that? We learned that whenever that stuff came about a couple years back. You know, those illnesses. I'm not going to get into the details about it. Yisrael had a promised land to get to. They could not stay at this mountain. For many, they may have been reluctant to move as this was the place where they met with Yehovah and may have been inclined to think, why move on? He is here with us. You get relaxed in that place. You don't want to move. You get comfortable. Sometimes you just can't get comfortable in a certain place. You can't get comfortable with certain people, certain things, friends. You know what I'm saying? Yehovah's got to be your all in all. Yeshua ended up in a spot where he was telling them, are you going to leave too? And he ended up being by himself. Who did he rely on? He relied on his father. That's what he's trying to get us to get. Though everybody in this congregation would go away, You're going to keep your eyes on Him and stay with Him. Don't fall away if somebody else falls away. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just using that as an example. Pay attention to the Father and look at Messiah, our example. Stay focused. It says, we too must recognize that we cannot and should not find ourselves learning the same lessons over and over each year, but rather we ought to be growing in wisdom and understanding as we walk out in obedient faith by diligently guarding to do the commands of Elohim. I'm having a fun time learning all these Hebrew words. These Hebrew words come from the Father that put all the heavens in the place where they are, and the birds and the colors and the smell and everything, the fish that I got to handle today. The spots on those speckled trout, we caught one today. I'm not used to seeing the spots throughout the whole tail like that. The whole head, the tail, and everything. He stuck out like a sore thumb. But I looked at him and I'm like, man, He created this. It's an alive, it's incredible what He did. And He spoke it by these Hebrew words that we are learning, these letters. We ought to be growing in wisdom and understanding as we walk out in obedient faith by diligently guarding to do the commands of Elohim. For too many get stuck at one place in their lives and then become unteachable and unwilling to press on in faith. You know, Pastor, he said Wednesdays, Fridays, and Shabbat. And you know, I was thinking about in the Torah portions, you call it it's almost like saying roll call, but it's when they did the, what do they call it? The census. When they had the census. The census was, okay, you in? Are you in? You in? Just like in military, you in? You in? All right. When Yeshua came to us and He called us, I never thought about it. When I was asking Pastor about the census, I said, is there ever going to be a time we call a census? You know, we can be accountable to one another. He says, a census was called when Yeshua called all of us. So we ought to be listening to the Spirit. So if Pastor says there's a certain time and a place, it should be a census we already heard already. Hey, He's trusting. We should be trusting to hear the Spirit. We ought to automatically know what He just said lined up. So it ought to be automatic. It shouldn't be a question. It shouldn't be maybe or if. When He says something, do you trust and rely what He's listening to? Is it the same Spirit we're supposed to be listening to? If it's the same Spirit, we ought to automatically line up. If He says, go to Indiana, we ought to automatically be going to Indiana. I read it instantly when it's time to go to Indiana. I read it. I had to take anything that I had going on and drop it. I had to drop it because I was told by the Spirit of Yehovah, we're going to Indiana. And we're going to Indiana. And so we did. And I'm glad we did go. I got to learn a lot of things. I got to meet a lot of new people, old people I had met before. And I had an incredible time. And it was all the Father's doing. So when Yeshua called us, that's really when the roll call was called, the census. So we should be listening to the Spirit, the set-apart Spirit. You won't know what to do if you don't hear the set-apart Spirit. This mountain was scorched with fire as His refining presence burnt away much of the rebellious nature that had been contracted while Israel were enslaved in Mishraim through the clear teaching of Moshe. But now it was time to go to Jerusalem to the fulfillment of the promises of Yehovah. Hebrews 12, 18 through 24. For you have not drawn near to a mountain touched and scorched with fire, and to blackness and darkness and storm, and a sound of a trumpet, and a voice of words, so that those who heard it begged that no further words should be spoken to them. For they could not bear what was commanded. If even a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot through with an arrow. And so fearsome was the sight that Moshe said, I exceedingly fear and tremble, but you have drawn near to Mount Zion, in the city of the living Elohim, to the heavenly Jerusalem, to myriads of messengers, to the entire gathering assembly of the firstborn having been enrolled in heaven, and to Elohim, the judge of all, and to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, and to Yeshua, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling, which speaks better than the blood of Abel. Staying at Mount Horeb or Zion would cause us to not see all that Yehovah longs to show us. And so there is certainly the necessity of stopping at this place, so to speak, and connect with this stop in our wilderness journey in order that we learn to hear His clear instructions. Yet there's a time to move on from this, from just receiving the Torah, to actually walking in it, and therefore staying at this mountain is a sign or metaphor of not applying what the truth of the Torah teaches us. So you to hear it, but you also to apply it and obey it and do it. And so therefore, when Yeshua did all that, He became the living Torah, and it was seen from our outward that was on the inward. So many today find themselves unwilling to change their worldly ways. No matter how many times they hear the truth and even verbally acknowledge the truth, the people that stay too long at this mountain is a picture of hearers only and are not faithful doers of what they attentively hear. Doers move on in the knowledge and understanding of what they have heard. Matthew 7:24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and does them shall be like a wise man who builds his house on a rock. Right? The Greek word that is translated as does. Oh, these Greek words. Poieo. Strong's G4160, which means to make, do, accomplish, keep, work, and acts. A derivative of this word is poietis. Poietis. G4163, which means a doer, a maker, and is seen in Jacob, James, 1:22-25, and become doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. Because if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and immediately forgets what he was like. But he that looked into the perfect Torah, that of freedom, and continues in it, not becoming a hearer that forgets, but a doer of the work, this one shall be blessed in his doing of the Torah. The word translated as doing of the Torah is also a derivative of poieo, and is the word poieis, Strong's G4162, which means deed, making, doing, performing in his doing, in the obedience he renders the law. These verses are very clear in telling us that the true hearer of the word guards it and performs it, as his obedience renders the law under which he submits. And you know, once you start applying those things that you're supposed to be doing, you start understanding them, that they're for your benefit and they give you life. And so we started coming here on Shabbat, and we had to rearrange our schedules, because for all our life we came here on a different day. We came here on the first day of the week, and then we started coming on the seventh day of the week. And then as you start learning, understanding what they are, it becomes clearer and clearer, and you can't wait for that day to get here. There was a time when I was in the world, when I was messed up on drugs and alcohol and whatever have you, whatever the world has to offer you, that's still the flesh and everything else. And so, what I was getting at, I lost my point. Oh, the Friday nights. I used to work at an oil supply company, and we toiled all week long, and we didn't like it. I didn't like my job, but my mind was always set on, I couldn't wait. 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, can't wait to get home. Me and my wife's going to get dressed up. We hitting Bourbon Street, New Orleans. We're going to party at the bars with our friends. We're going to meet at a house somewhere, and we're going to drink alcohol, do drugs, do whatever, and party all night long. We couldn't wait. We couldn't wait. And now when Shabbat's around the corner, I can't wait for Friday afternoon. It's right around the corner. And then you learn that those Friday afternoon to Saturday afternoon, you can do it all week too. You can do it on Sunday. You can do it on Monday. You can do it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, leading up to those days. As you learn the Torah and you start living in it and applying it, the world can't hurt you like it used to hurt you before and bring you down. You're not in fear of a lot of things that used to be in fear of anymore. Things that used to break you down. You're more stronger, more courageous, and you look at Jehovah as the one who's going to lead me through all these battles, all these storms and things that I go through in life, not knowing where my next step of my journey is going to be. It's uncertain, but I know for sure what happened with the children of Israel and the ones who are obedient, Joshua and Caleb, Yeshua, he's going to lead me through, and I'm going to make it, and I'm going to be victorious. And you can be. I don't see it yet, but I believe it. I've never seen Yeshua, but I believe and trust in him, and I believe as a real fact was not revealed to my senses that he's my Messiah, and he's praying over me day and night, watching over me. And when I make a mistake, I repent, and I teshuva, and he forgives me, and he goes before the Father for me until I get it right. And I'm going to keep on working on those things. Many things I've gotten right, many things I haven't gotten right. And I'm still going to keep on working on those things. And as we go through all these Torah portions, everything we're learning, we're just going to keep applying and learning until he comes. Deuteronomy 1:7 says, "Turn and set out on your way and go into the mountains of the Amorites and to all the neighboring places in the desert plain and in the mountains and the low country and in the Negev and on the seacoast, to the land of the Canaanites and to Lebanon, as far as the great river Euphrates." Verse 7, "Turn and set on your way." The Hebrew word that is translated as turn is panah, H6437, which means to turn towards a direction. And in order for us to turn towards a direction, we must turn from another direction, right? We must learn to turn our backs on many things that we picked up in enslavement or midstream in Egypt and all its inherited lies. You know, for years when I used to go to church, we used to do Pesach, we used to do Passover, and you take the blood and put it on the doorpost. And that's all I ever knew. It never did click till just recently, you know, when Pastor said all the names of those gods that they learned in there were all in that doorpost. And the blood would cover all that paganism that we picked up along the way. And so when it clicked like that, I was talking to the guy on the boat the other day, and I was able to share that story so clearly with them. You don't know that. You're just taught certain things, and you don't go back and read and find out for yourself. And when you find it out, you're like, that's what that means. All the puzzle pieces go together. And Yeshua's blood paints over all those things that we learn and we get rid of out of our lives. We must learn to turn our backs on many things that we picked up in enslavement. That's what they came out of enslavement in Egypt. They built all those things. They put all those things together in enslavement. Then they come out, and it takes a while to get all those things that you've been taught, like we talked about last time I was here teaching, you know, after Hurricane Katrina, you know, all the memories, Thanksgiving, and all the things we used to do at Grandma and Grandpa's house, the whole house was gone. It was a waste. You never get to go there and do that again. Even the trees, we used to come down the driveway. All the trees that were in place that I grew up as a kid, all the nets that we used to stretch on those trees, and patch those nets that we used to go catch the fish with, all the mullet nets. Me and my wife, when we first got together and first got married, we needed to make money to pay for the apartment we was living in. And so my grandfather had X amount of mullet nets for the mullet fishermen down here in Venice. They were steady catching mullets, tearing them up, and they didn't have time to make a net. So they would take the nets and bring them to my grandpa for us to cut them off the hangings, and get paid to rehang a new webbing on there and to sell it to them for a certain amount. That was 1,200 feet. It would take us, I think it was sometimes 4 to 5 days, but when we got good at it, we could do three of them. I mean, 3 days. We could do 3 days. 1 in 3 days, putting them on there. She's on one side on the lead line, and I'm on this side on the cork line in my grandpa's basement. It's probably about as long as this building. We used to go across like that and sew it, and we'd get done, we'd get paid for those nets. But all those memories, if I go over there, I just see the property, but their memories are still there. And all those memories and those things that they had in Egypt and that they learned along the way, they had to start letting go of those things. So every journey, whenever they would put their tents down, they would learn. And they would pick up and they would move, and they have to keep leaving those things behind. And some of them, they just couldn't get it out of their head. They couldn't get rid of it. They just loved the world in Egypt more than Yehovah and what he had to offer. Oh, you're going to bring us through this mess again? We might as well stay back in Egypt. But they just wouldn't let things go. You got to let things go to get something. On many things that were picked up in the enslavement of Mishraim and all its inherited lies and dogmas of man, especially after the hearing of the Torah and recognition of where and what we are here, what we're heading for. A derivative of this word, panah, Strong's 86, I can relate that to whenever I've gone places out on the water that I've never been. The first time I had to go 8 miles out there, by myself, and I know pastor and different ones that did it. I have customers on the boat, and I'm going that far out, and it's like, you're out in the deep. This is your first time. I've never done this before. And it's a really scary feeling. It's uneasy. But now, it's like at the top of a hat. I'm gone. I've done it many a times. It just takes some time to get used to it. There's things that we're not used to yet. It's kind of scary at first. You're not sure. You're not certain. Is this the right way? Are you sure? And we had to take Jehovah's word for it and let go of some things and just take that leap of faith, take that step. And it's like, wow, I'm glad I did that. It's a derivative of this word is panah. Strong's 86440, meaning face, faces. What we see here is the need to turn our faces towards Jehovah. And we have that prayer, and I've been praying for a lot of people. When I get up in the morning, I said, thank you, Father, that your face will shine upon all my brothers and my sisters. Ephraim, Manasseh, Yehuda, the Gentiles, all the lost and loved ones, all my pastors, I thank you that your face would shine upon them. Your face would shine upon them. What we see here is the need to turn our faces toward Jehovah and keep our eyes fixed on Yeshua and walk in Him as regard to do all He commands us. In the phrase, set on your way, the Hebrew root word that is used for way or journey is nasa. Nasa, which means pull up, pull out, set out, and journey. This is clearly a command to go forward. In other words, pick up your tent pegs where we're leaving. Pick up your tent pegs, we're leaving. We're moving on. So when we went to Shabbat, what we was doing before, pastor said, y'all can show up here on a certain day, but I'm not going to be here. This is where I'm going to be. So you got to decide whatever you want to do. And so we had to pick up our tent pegs. Do you get it? Do you see it? And our whole journey, we're going to be picking up our stakes and following Him. He's the living Torah. Pick up your stakes, follow me. That's what He says. It says, stay yoked up with me. And if you don't want to stay yoked up, what happens with the big ox? He's going to pull that little one along. He's going to drag you by your neck. Or you're going to get knocked out of it, and then you're going to really be in trouble. We are moving on, going forward. No time to sit around and be afraid. Trusting in Yehovah must never be confused with laziness and ignorance to His instructions. He will not break camp for us, so to speak. Yes, He will fight for us and deliver us from sin and slavery to our entrenched habits, but we must show that we believe Him by taking the necessary steps and so prove our faith by our works. By our works. That grass out there don't get cut by itself, I'll just let y'all know. It grows. And somebody's got to do some works. You got to get out there and cut it. Trusting in Yehovah must never be confused with laziness and ignorance to His instructions. He will not break camp for us, so to speak. Isaiah, Yeshayahu, 43:2. When you pass through the waters, I am with you, and through the rivers, they do not overflow you. When you walk through fire, you are not scorched, and a flame does not burn you. When you pass through, when you walk through, we're to be a people walking by faith. And the emphasis here is on the moving, active faith. Deuteronomy 1:8. See, I have set the land before you. Go and possess the land which Jehovah swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, to give to them and their seed after them. You know, we don't have time to go further into the Torah portion where I'm about to speak, but there was a time where they rebelled against Yehovah. They rebelled and they repented and they said, well, what are we going to do? We're going to go up, we're going to go fight against them. He said, don't go fight against them because you're going to lose. And they went up there anyway. They went and did what they wanted to do. And they lost big time. A lot of them died. They weren't supposed to do that. I've set the land before you. Go and possess the land which Yehovah swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, to give to them and their seed after them. Verse 8, go in and possess. It is only when we take up our stake daily. So when we talk about in the New Testament, in the Brit Hadishah, talking about taking up your stake, you'll find it in the Torah. It's reflective of a tent peg. It is only when we take up our stake daily and walk in obedience that we'll be able to properly take possession of the promises that are in Messiah. Take possession is what we're told to do. The root word that is used here for possess is yeresh. Strong's H3423, which means to dispossess, drive out, expel, disinherit, bring to ruin, destroy, and can also mean to take possession of inheritance, occupy, or seize. What this, in a sense, means for us is that we are to dispossess or disinherit in order to possess and inherit. Does that make sense? I certainly hope so. We have inherited a whole lot of lies. Lies that have caused us to sin and be lawless, and so we therefore need to dispossess, disinherit those very lies and take back ground that is rightfully ours as our inheritance in Messiah as we take possession by guarding His commands and walking in His ways, being stripped of all lies and falsehood. When you learn the Torah and you're really, really meditating on it day and night like we're supposed to, you'll start recognizing the false versus the real. Because there is a false Messiah that He talks about. And there is a real Messiah that He talks about. Boy, this was the main thing I wanted to really get into. They got so much in these Torah portions. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Y'all going to have the slides, I'm sure. Go and check out if you haven't. Wise, wisdom, the Hebrew meanings of knowledge and knowing. I'm just going to take you through these four slides here and we're going to end it right here. I don't have time to go through all that. So, leaders appointed. And I spoke to you at that time saying, I am unable to bear you myself by myself. Yehovah Elohim has increased you, and see, you are today as numerous as the stars of the heavens. Yehovah Elohim of your fathers is going to add to you 1,000 times more than you are and bless you as He has spoken to you. How do I bear your pressure and your burden and your strife by myself? Choose men, wise and understanding and known to your tribes, and let me appoint them as your heads. And you answered me and said, the word which you have spoken to us to do is good. And I took the heads of your tribes, wise men and known, and made them heads over you, leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, and leaders of fifties, and leaders of tens and officers for your tribes. In verse 9 through 15, Moshe was unable to bear Yisrael by himself, and so men were chosen and appointed over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. And I'm pretty sure that relieves pastor a lot whenever he's got things he's got to take care of, and they got some men in his church can take his place to help him when he's got to go take care of business. Or even like in this situation right now, his wife isn't doing good right now. We're praying for her. So he's got to be home with her. What if he's the only one and there's nobody else? Oh, I'm busy. I got stuff going on. I'm busy. I got stuff going on. Brother Scott was supposed to help me out with this night tonight, but it was me again because he got caught up. But that's okay. That's okay. Because I know this Messiah of mine that says, hey, Father, I'm willing to go. I'm willing to die for every one of them. And this is just a Torah night. This is just a Bible study. But I said, Father, I'm willing to go. If you want me to go, I'll go. I'm ready. I'm willing. Count me in. That's what the census is. Count me in. Remember what a vow is? A vow is when what you say, we will do. Shabbat on the seventh day, what you say, we will do. And that's what we're supposed to be. Well, vow a vow. And that's what it is. And so count me in. And so he says it better be better for you to not vow a vow than to vow a vow and break it. And so we see in the Torah portion, there's a lot of things that we kind of, you know, I really don't have to. He or she will understand. It's not he or she to understand. It's Yehovah going to understand. And he said clearly, you're not to vow a vow and break it. I'll take your word for it. Because that's what he's done all his life. He's the eternal God, all the heavens and the earth. And when he speaks something, he doesn't change a bit. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And man, with their traditions and religions, have changed his stuff and added to it and taken away from it. And he's never changed it, not one time. And today, the world is riveted with people that think something and believe something and say, we don't have to do that no more. And he never said that. It's a travesty to the church and people. And to teach that to others, that's false and lies. So we're teaching other people whenever we say something is okay and it's not, we're teaching bad habits. It'd be no different than to take my children and say, it's okay to do these drugs when it's not. It's okay to go in to the bank or to a store and steal. It's not right to do that whenever you say that. He never said that. And he'll tell you in many places, he said, I never said that. Moshe was unable to bear Israel by himself, and so men were chosen and appointed over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. In verse 11, he reminded them of the clear and sure promise of increase with just over 600,000 fighting men. These prophetic words would indicate well over 600 million fighting men. What is being emphasized here is that the promise given to Abraham still stands. With Moshe appointing the heads, we also see clearly the shadow picture of how it is Messiah who appoints the necessary officers within the body in order to build up the body. In Ephesians, I'm sure everybody's looked over this before. But we also recognize that in Moshe saying that he himself cannot bear all, we see the understanding of how we have not only been given the Torah, but also the prophets and the writings in order for us to learn and do righteousness. And in verse 11, he reminds Israel how he told them to choose men who are wise and understanding and are known. And do you not know that these wise and these understanding and men that are known, men that knew and lived out the Torah and were picked because they did what they were told, that they're the ones that ended up falling away. Isn't that hard to believe? That they're the ones that fell away. Watch, let me show you. I can't believe how far down it was. I'm just going to stop right there. I'm not going to get into it. So we'll just stop right there and just stay in your Torah portions, reading, learning, and keep doing what he tells you, being led by the Spirit. Does anybody have anything?